You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 255, episode 3 of Dirty Lee's Untasty, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Wednesday, September 21st, 2022. So
922, National Chai Day, National New York Day, National Pecan Cookie Day, or Pecan Cookie Day, depending on how you pronounce it.
Where, but I love, where you are.
I love pecans.
As the main feature in a cookie, pecan.
Okay. Yeah. I've never had a pecan cookie. I guess, so it's just like a sugar cookie with chopped up pecan.
Yeah, I always associate them with like those tins of cookies that are mostly dust, seem to be the main, like they're very dry.
Yes,
I've like, come to appreciate them in old age because you can like dunk them in coffee and stuff. But when I was a kid, I was like,
your mouth will never have
spit in it again.
Yeah. Right. There's desiccant gel in my mouth.
Yeah. Anyways, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Potatoes O'Brien, in solidarity with my Irish brethren, who I understand are just trying to find direction in these first days after the passing of the Queen.
Indeed.
So we're thinking of you, and I'm thrilled to be joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
This royal knob built a city, had to find somewhere stupid Charles could play. Sausage fingers doing their creeping, just don't make them use a fountain pen. The people all y'all yearning for Poundbury to be burning. Curving rose for funsies. Okay, shout out to the brew who, obviously, look, we're talking about Poundbury, the town that Prince Charles designed with roads that are just curved for no reason at all, which I believe, did you say curving for funsies? Somebody did.
Yeah, I think you said for funsies. But
just
yeah.
Curving the roads for funsies.
I'll take the funsies. I mean,
yeah, it was a group effort, honestly. Yeah. So
I've shout out to Poundbury, if you live in that
Poundbury
place,
that,
where yeah. Prince Charles designed it for you.
I really am curious if we have a single listener in Poundbury. But
if okay, if you are call in, you will be on the show. If you are one listener in Poundbury, the weird housing estate that Prince Charles
or just like know someone there, I want to like have a listener go and like tell us what it's like. It's,
yeah,
it sounds
like FaceTime
strange.
Us from Poundbury.
Yeah. Anyways, Miles,
yes.
We are thrilled to be joined by an acclaimed wildlife ecologist and conservationist who specializes in researching how human activity influences the behavior of wild animals. She's the host of the PBS Nature podcast, Going Wild, with Dr. Ray Wynn Grant, which makes sense because she is Dr. Ray Wynn Grant!
Dr. Ray!
Woo-hoo!
What's up, Dr. Ray?
I'm Welcome. Here.
Dr. Wynn Grant.
Dr.
Ray Wynn Grant.
Doctor.
Is that cool? Just Dr. Doctor?
Doctor, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I was I did ask if I could call you Dr. Grant because I just, you know, for Jurassic Park purposes.
Out of respect.
But
yes.
Yeah.
I love that, but you know, the answer is no. I can't shade the Wynn side of my whole family. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
makes sense.
And you did say Jurassic Park is a seminal film for you as well?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, what year did it come out? I don't
93.
Know, but like 93. Okay. I was mm-hmm. 8 years old.
Okay.
I definitely did not see it in theaters, but probably like the next year when it was on VHS, like
yes.
It became my favorite. How could it not? Like I felt like I was one of those kids, like the blonde girl with the hair and the like kitchen scene, mm-hmm. you know, heart pumping. And then of course, like I was a little baby nerd. And like a wildlife nerd and like an extinction nerd. So I was super into the whole like concepts. Did I possibly also have like a very early sexual awakening with with some of the cast members like in their iconic scenes? Possibly.
Okay.
I had a little baby crush.
We're not saying which one.
Jeff Goldblum is like seared into my
memory. When that shirt's open, I was even like, is that how a man's body should look as a child?
Oh my gosh, she's all injured and vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
With
oh
your with your nice tailored shirt open, we see you, Dr. Malcolm.
Yeah.
No wonder I'm a scientist.
I was curious, like sort of because you are, you know, you do this now for a living and you're great at what you do, that you are always had this interest. In my mind, I was hoping like, did Jurassic Park completely kick this off for you? But it was just a light post on the way.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there's kind of like two angles to this story. Like there's a very basic one where, again, I was a little baby nerd and my favorite shows to watch on TV were nature shows. So like... Mm. The David Attenborough, the Steve Irwin, like the, you know, the classic, like British, Australian nature shows, loved them. And so when I was a kid, people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd say, I want to be a nature show host. Like, I want to see wild animals. You know, I was from California. I didn't necessarily have this understanding that nature was like outside my door, like, you know, like 30 miles away. Like, I thought you have to like jump over oceans to get to the wilderness. And I was like, the only way I can do that is to be a nature show host because I did not have anyone in my like sphere who went into the wilderness.
Right.
And so I was like, nature show host, do that for a living. That's what I want to do. I want to be up close and personal with wild animals. That's the career. And so then like later, like college age, I learned that like, oh, there's like a science to that. Like there's people who like study endangered species and like develop the science to prevent their extinction.
Right.
That was like a way more accessible career path than like being like the lucky like bingo winner who gets to be a nature show host, you know?
Right.
I latched on to that. The other way I'll say it is that like I was a child of the 90s, right? So like we were getting all those fear tactics like thrown at us all the time, right? Like
mm-hmm.
like the DARE officer would come to the playground and be like, don't go trick-or-treating. Like people are gonna give you drugs.
They're gonna
and you'll
try
die.
And give you drugs for free.
Yeah,
for
like there's
oh, okay.
gonna be
that's
like
the,
free drugs disguised as candy, you know, like be afraid of everything. And so I was super afraid of wildlife extinction. You know, it was like whales, you know, it was like save the whales, like save the pandas, like save like eagles, like bald eagles, our national
Condor.
Yeah, like they were going extinct, right? Yeah. And so it was like super alarming and everything was alarming, but I kind of like latched on to that stuff. And when I learned like there are people out there like creating solutions for this, I was like, I have to be one of those people. Like, otherwise, what are we going to do? Like a world, no eagles. Like, I got to help.
Yeah, amazing.
So I've calmed down like these days. I do it because I love it. I'm more relaxed. But it started kind of out of like a love for TV and then like a subsequent like 90s anxiety.
Yeah. Mm. Did you also have like those zoo books and stuff or like those like animal file books? Like I remember my school library, or like every month there'd be like new dossiers on animals. You'd be like, aha.
Totally. And then I read like Animorphs books. So the kids that morph into animals, like fight aliens. Yeah. And you know, the whole thing.
The usual. Okay. You were there.
Yeah. I'm just realizing it's weird that Jurassic Park, like of the scientists they bring to this expedition slash like testing out of the park, none of them are scientists. That they bring two like dinosaur bone specialists. Yeah. I know that's
she's actually a paleobotanist. She's a paleobotanist.
Okay. And then a mathematician and a lawyer. And they don't bring anybody who like works with wild like, animals,
no
which seems
actual
like
biologists. Yeah.
It feels like a miss.
We need a remake. We need like a docu-series.
Yeah.
The real Jurassic Park.
Miss by Richard Attenborough, who is David Attenborough's brother.
Right.
So the Attenborough family, very influential.
Do you think there's a way, I mean, and I hate to just indulge, use your professional knowledge to indulge my stupid question. Is there a way to do Jurassic Park responsibly if we could?
Oh, that's big.
Because you study carnivores, correct?
That's a huge question.
That's a huge question.
And look,
question,
I like to start up front with hypotheticals to
that
our
could
specialized
take the entire
guests.
Episode.
You know, why don't we? Like, the reason this is like also kind of a touchy subject is that there's this company out there that is doing this, but with the woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It is really happening. Like it is moving forward. It is happening. Like they contacted me last year to ask if I would like get involved. And I said no, because I was like, eesh. Like the science is there. Like it's not a question of like, is this possible? Can we do it? Like the answer is like, for sure. It's an amazing feat of science, but like, yeah, we can do it. Should we do it? And will it actually contribute to like climate mitigation, which is one of the things they're arguing? They're like, if we have these animals like trudging around the tundra, it can like allow the soil to sequester carbon better. Like maybe we should just like stop emitting, you know, greenhouse gases.
If they
instead.
Invited me to be involved in that, which they probably will eventually, I'm sure I'm on their list.
Oh, podcast host is definitely
I would just
below.
Reply with a link to Jurassic Park. To the movie Jurassic Park, and no further questions.
The Dr. Ian Malcolm quote, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
Now look at my chest hair.
Yeah, now look at my chest hair, my abs.
Amazing. All right, Dr. Ray, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we are talking about. It's a Trisha episode. We are going to bring in super producer Trisha Mukherjee, also, you know, Daily Zeitgeist correspondent Trisha Mukherjee, to talk about the history of white supremacy and conservation and environmentalism and the history and present of it. And, you know, just some of the amazing things that you've done and talked about on your show. We're going to maybe check in with what's going on with Donald Trump's attempt, the special master strategy, the special master gambit. It sounds like a chess movie.
They're in court right now as we're recording, and I'm reading like a play-by-play on Twitter, and it is not going well for him.
Yeah, wild. So might talk about that. We might even talk about why nobody watches, kids especially don't watch TV anymore. Plenty more. But first, Dr. Ray, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
Oh, yeah. Wait, I wrote this down because I, like I told you, prepared for this. And so, okay, so the last thing from my Google search history from yesterday when I prepared was Googling my hairstylist's booking site. Okay. Like right. I needed to book some appointments for my hairstylist, but not for me. It's because I'm a mama and I have two little girls.
Okay.
And it is school picture week.
Wow.
And I may or may not have dropped the ball on the preparation. And in particular, like I am a Black woman. I have like, a Black husband. We are a Black family. So hair is not necessarily simple. Right.
No.
It's not like a
Can't
little wash
anybody.
And style morning of. Right. It's like a whole like wash day, blow dry, braid down, like proper style for my kids, a skill that I do not have myself. And so do I have like a relationship with my hairstylist where I can just text her and be like, SOS, like
Please.
Help me out.
Right.
No.
Pictures.
Oh, so no. I had to go the formal route and like find her website and get a last minute booking, and I failed. And so now I may or may not be panicking about that. So that's from my search
When
history.
Are the school pictures? When are the school pictures?
Thursday. It's Thursday.
Thursday.
Today's Tuesday.
Okay,
I have to
look,
like,
Zeit gang, I know some of y'all live out there. And
Santa
I know
Barbara.
People,
yeah.
we got all kinds. Look, maybe somebody from L.A. can come hook you
Hit
up.
Me
okay.
Up.
Yeah. Please
okay.
help
Spare
her
no
daughters.
Expense. I mean, don't make it crazy, but like little brown heads need to be braided up, please.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Let's not. Oh, please. Somebody.
I get so stressed out by school pictures. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and all these other kids, like that, when I see the pictures in the little yearbook at the end of the year, like they nail it. Like for some reason, they have a way of getting these other little kids to just be natural. And then my kids are always like, they have their eyes almost closed and it looks like a dental exam. Like they're just, and I'm like, I know I've taken pictures of these kids. I know that this is not impossible, but yeah, I get very stressed out. So we do a lot of, facial warm ups at home, pose. I just stop them in the middle of whatever they're doing and say pose. And they have to give me a natural
hit your angles,
smile.
Hit your angles, hit your angles. Yeah. I was the worst picture taker.
I was too.
I looked like I was trying to fuck with my parents, like with how bad my pictures were. Like, I told you, I don't like it. So you want me to smile, you'll get this. Just the most pained smile you've ever seen a child do.
A smile from a child that somehow says, fuck you.
Yeah. You'd be like, damn, he's only in kindergarten. You managed to say all that with that smile.
What is something you think is overrated?
Oh, wait, what did I write down? This is controversial. So I did not think I was going to jump right into controversy.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
But something that as an expert, I believe is overrated is recycling.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay. You didn't think I was going to say that. Now, I'm not saying don't recycle, but if you learn more about
what our quote unquote recycling
how
is,
how effective recycling is, you will learn that it is a freaking disaster. The whole system is a hot mess, and recycling does not reach or even come close to reaching the goals we think it does. In a lot of ways, there's an argument it does more harm than good. Like, it takes a lot of fossil fuel emissions to recycle things, like to turn like aluminum or glass into new aluminum and glass. It actually, like, we have to pollute a lot to get that done. There's like so many issues with it.
Right.
So a solution, please keep recycling, but like even better, reduce your consumption and reuse the things that you consume. So like emphasis on reduce and reuse, recycling's overrated.
Yep. Mm. I was shamed by my reusable shopping bags, like the thick plastic ones that a lot of the stores got around like the thin bag ban with. They're like, well, now we give reusable ones out. And I was just like, I could make a submarine if I melted all this plastic down, like
it's
full
still
size
plastic.
And I don't throw it away too, because part of me's like, you can't recycle that shit, and I'm like, I don't want to waste it. So then eventually I am like able to use those a little bit better, but now I always bring my big ass like reusable bag with
you're
me
like
because,
canvas tote
because I've been thoroughly just put into a state of panic over like how terrible I am with that kind of stuff.
Reduce and reuse. That's the way.
Yeah. Mm. And it's wild how much packaging stuff too, like says it has like a recycling logo on it. Yet you have to go take some things to like specialized places. Like you can't just put that in like your city recycling can sometimes.
Wait, I learned you will die. I recently learned, again, I just got a whole like proper education on this. So now I can speak as an expert. I recently learned that in like several states in this country, it is legal to put a recycling symbol on anything, even if it's not recyclable.
What?
Like there's just a like loophole as a design? And people right. use the loophole.
They're like, it's yeah. just good marketing for recycling.
It's kind of like it's kind of like saying, like, if you can figure out a way to recycle this, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, but we don't have a way.
Wow.
That yeah. is yeah. so American. It's wild. It is. Yeah. It is so exactly. So yeah. American. Anyway, so like, don't think you're doing something by recycling. It is overrated. There are better ways. Reduce, reuse at a minimum.
Yeah. Right. I just like to collect those plastic bags that have the big recycling thing on it because it proves that I'm here to yeah. save the earth. As many of those yeah, as I can have.
Conscious.
It shows,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is something that you think is underrated?
Yeah, I really am really into sweet potatoes. I think that sweet potatoes do not get nearly enough love and play. And I don't mean like doing anything fancy with them. I don't mean like that they're versatile. I'm saying like bake a sweet potato and yeah. eat it and you will be so happy with yourself. Like people don't have sweet potatoes enough as a part of their meal. And so I am like sweet potato. Like I eat so many sweet potatoes. I feel like I should like invest in a farm or something. Like I have my whole family, like I don't cube them. We don't do sweet potato fries, like proper baked sweet potatoes. My little trick is to like overcook them. Right. So like instead of an hour soft. In the oven, yeah. like try it 2 hours in the oven. Mm. Right. And then like use a bunch of butter and just like put it as a side on your dinner and like thank me later.
You can eat yeah. it with a straw at that point. After 2 hours, you can just slurp it up.
So, it's like dessert. It's so good.
That is so good with a ton of butter. And you do like feel it. It is filling and also like
it's
I feel
filling,
like it provides
it's nutritious.
Energy.
Yeah.
My
oh, it's
body
like super
feels
nutritious.
Better after I eat that than like a baked potato.
Right.
With apologies to the Irish.
No, it's like nutritious. It is filling. It's sweet. It like gets you your little beta carotene. There are other varieties, right? You could do like a Japanese sweet potato. You yeah. can do a purple sweet potato, like do a yam or whatever. If that is actually different, I don't know. Like,
yeah.
you know, like, yeah, but like do it. Like, thank me later for sure.
There's yeah. There, I love sweet potatoes and in my family, a lot of people love. So my mom makes a Japanese version of sweet potatoes because she's from Japan, which is like using like sugar and honey and soy sauce and sesame. That's like really good. And I remember my black grandparents trying it and they were like, what the fuck is this? And then they were completely Yum. Turned around by eating it. It's called daigaku imo, which is called college potato. I don't know why it's called that. It's like the name of the recipe. But yeah, there was a video recently of this dude. I don't know if you saw it. There's a guy who does like, who had never heard of a sweet potato before. It was like this viral video where the guy's like putting like a sweet potato through like a French fry press. And he's like, sweet potato. It's like, what is this?
Potato.
And he's like, yeah, it looks like a QVC segment where he's like, I guess I'll see. And he like pushes it through and he's like, this is, it's orange. Like, I've never seen anything like this. And I couldn't believe that this person, it had to have been a bit because I refuse to believe that there's a human being who has any like sort of interest in potatoes who has not seen a sweet potato before.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm.
But I don't know. There's like, you know, you get surprised. Like, wasn't there that video like of DMX, may he rest in peace, when he like didn't know Barack
Google?
Obama was the president?
Yeah. Or what Google was.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
but
like,
he was also smoking crack. So
yeah,
I want to give
him
a pass
yeah,
that, you
yeah,
know, maybe time moves at a different
at
speed.
Yeah.
yeah. Time yeah. moves at a different speed for DMX.
No, it's true.
But there's no reason for Stacey Dash to not know that he died. But again, we had to put her. And, you know, just sorry, Stacey.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college who had never had a banana and like he knew what they were. He wasn't
like he was like screaming at the sight of it.
Banana. But like he was that was his he refused. We were like, oh, they're so good, man. What are you doing? And he just refused to even try bananas because he
would
was
it be like trying
out.
To feed a child where it's like he'd be like lips
I did
burst
the,
together.
I did the plane coming in for a landing and he just pursed his
did
lips
he articulate
together.
A reason why?
No, he was just a quirky dude. Very,
that is
very
surprising, though,
because
again, yeah, like even as kids, bananas are like forced upon us. Like you watch a cartoon, people play tricks on each other. You like slip on a banana peel. Yep.
Right.
That's like appealing.
So central.
You know? Yeah.
So central that my kids eat like so many bananas.
25 bananas a day, and then they get constipated. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. It is not good for the digestive system. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk to you a little bit more with super producer Trisha.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
And we're back, and we are joined by super producer Trisha Mukherjee.
Hello. Good to be here. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. So you, you know, were reading through Dr. Ray's work and listening to her podcast, and you begged us to come on to talk to her about just kind of, I mean, that you put together a nice story just like highlighting some of the really fascinating aspects of her work. So you want to take us through it?
Yes, of course. So I was reading about your work, Dr. A, and it was amazing. First of all, I would recommend that everyone listens to your podcast. Going Wild is the name, right?
Yeah.
Going Wild with Raywin Grant. That's right. Mm-hmm. Named it after myself.
Nice. Smart.
Good title.
And so I was reading, I was seeing all these really adorable pictures of you with baby bear cubs and with like snakes and lemurs and all these other animals. It was great. But as I was
as I was looking through these photos and just reading about your work in, you know, this the hard science part of it, as well as environmental justice, I was just thinking a lot about people of color in nature, in these fields that focus on the outdoors. I love the outdoors. I really like long distance cycling and trekking and all these other adventure sport type things. But it's so rare that I see other people of color while I'm doing these things. So I know that you've also talked about this a lot. I wanted to look into why this is, you know, the history behind people of color feeling unwelcome in the outdoors and what we can do about it today.
Yeah, you were talking about a book that you read, Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places.
Yeah, so it was just this book that I came across a long time ago, and it was just the most simple concept. It was just photos of people of color in nature, like happy walking, you know,
imagine.
Among the greenery.
Right. Imagine and, that.
Yeah, like, and I was actually shocked to see it because it made me so happy, first of all. But I was like, why does this look weird? It shouldn't look weird. Mm. Like, why has society made right. this something to marvel at?
You know what, Trisha? There are some really beautiful photos of Dr. Martin Luther King and his family in like recreating in nature, and you never see them, right? Like, we always say the same, we see the same pictures of Martin Luther King. Yeah. And like these photos are beautiful, and they also seem like strange, like, oh, weird, like, you know,
right.
the 60s,
it's like, what was that photo
a black
shoot?
Family, yeah, right. like in right. like a in the forest, you know, mm. yeah, it's just it's society has given us this idea that mm-hmm. like, you know, we've been socialized to believe that people of color don't exist in nature. We're like a urban only.
Yeah. yeah. And like internalized it to the point where I even remember being like, nah, I don't do that. Like mm-hmm. white friends would be like, we're going to go camp. I'm like, nah, I don't camp. Like, this is not, I'm not, I have no concept of people that look like me doing that. So it never occurred to me to engage with nature, like in that sense too. But I'm sure like anything in this country, we have, you know, we can draw lines back to an earlier mm-hmm. time where mm-hmm. we completely misunderstood our relationship to each other or the land. Right.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because I can remember even a few years ago in ads for companies like REI or Patagonia, all these outdoors brands, it was all white people. Yeah. And now they've slowly started to kind of realize that it's an issue. And you see more people of color in those ads, which gives me a lot of hope. I mean, I remember the first time I saw a South Asian person in one of those ads, and it was great. I was like, well, another one. But yeah, so it's changing. But if we go way back and we think about this idea of nature in general, we think about the white settlers that came to what is now the United States and how they really just tore apart the lifestyle of indigenous peoples who lived on the land before then. They thought of land as something that needed to be protected, preserved, something that you live in harmony with rather than exploit. In this very capitalist settler mindset that eventually became the norm. And when settlers came, they introduced this idea of an untouched wilderness, you know, just trees and forests and rivers, somewhere where nobody lived. And if we dig a little deeper into that idea, you just see that that's not true because there are people who live with the land and they live on it, but it's still, you know, it's still respected. And a proponent of this idea was John Muir, who's a very famous mm-hmm. environmentalist. I'm sure everyone's heard his name.
Sierra Club. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And he said that this land should be set aside for recreation to fulfill an emotional need for wild places, which I thought was just an absolutely ridiculous statement because there were so many people, especially indigenous peoples, who were kicked off that land. And like, what about their emotional needs and what about their emotional fulfillment?
His constantly like romanticizing like the wild lands that were basically free of indigenous people, you know, really opened the door for this kind of like exclusionary thinking and like who gets to enjoy the environment. Like would always juxtapose like the beauty of the landscapes but these dirty faced half happy, you know, like just all kinds of like terrible derogatory statements about indigenous people, black people. And he always would say, like, he used a quote that these indigenous people, quote, seem to have no right place in the landscape. which right. we saw that kind of like extend to like of like especially like in colonial Africa as like game reserves are opened up. This same idea of like, oh, people have lived here for centuries. No, I don't know. This is a theme park for white tourists. Like the Maasai people were just kicked out of certain places. Like there's a lot of history of just like the same thinking of like, hi, nature. Nobody should be here unless it's us just looking at it to just take a load off. And
that's also so reactionary. Like,
right.
I agree with what y'all are both saying. And I think John Muir is such a good example because he and his way are romanticized in our society because he was like thinking about solutions, right? Like there was a problem and he's like, oh, a solution is to right. do this. But I get frustrated when like, I feel like no one talks about the problem he was trying to find a solution mm-hmm. for, right? The problem was that like white men on this continent like decimated all of nature. And then right. at some point we're like, oh shoot, like we all like if we don't stop and like preserve a little bit, we're gonna have none left. I have an idea. Like, what if we asked John Muir to like create national parks for us? Like, so yeah, that was a solution. It one harmed people, you know, two, it didn't like work the way we wanted it to. It was completely unfair, unjust, and inequitable. But also like a better thing to do would be to like have like not done all of that like right. development of the land and destruction of, you know, wildlife and wild communities and wild places to begin with. And no one's talking about that because that was done by the same like social group of people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like yeah. Teddy Roosevelt was like, we need national parks. Teddy Roosevelt like killed countless animals. Like we cannot count how many wild animals he killed across the world. He killed so many animals like for fun, for sport, not to eat them. Right.
Right.
And then he's the same person being like, hey, like let's do a national park thing. Like that's being environmentally friendly. Mm-hmm. Like right. what? Like these people were hypocrites. And it is very unpopular in my line of work to call that out. So I appreciate y'all doing it. I appreciate y'all like trying to really reimagine how we talk about environmental history, especially from the American mm-hmm. perspective. But, you know, just in general, like our society and like the environmental movement does not largely accept that these people were problematic.
Yeah, right. Which is wild because I remember at the time people were defending. I remember, you know, the head of the Sierra Club in the summer of 2020 was sort of like, hey, if we're going to talk about Fort Bragg and these Confederates and like renaming stuff, we should really look at people like John Muir and things like that. And a lot of people are like, we can't be applying these purity tests or trying to say, like, well, look at all the good that he did. Sure. But to then like ignore that and also say that the way the early conservation movement was even looking at like what people's relationship was to the land kind of put a lot of terrible momentum behind like this ideology now is obviously worth like examining. Does that like tension, like, so what's as it stands, right? Does that tension still exist between conservationists where some people are like, we just got to keep this nice and that's it, just conserve that, versus people are like, oh, we're completely ignoring the heaviest part of this conversation.
It's a mess. It's really? A mess. And I don't want anyone to think that like it's doom and gloom and there's no reason to have hope. Like that's not it. But basically the model of conservation, like to Trisha's point, has always been a neo-colonial, white supremacist, patriarchal model. Always. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have a new one that is like globally accepted. And so I would say like these days there are enough like revolutionary radical thinkers in the conservation movement that are like helping to like reject these ideas. But in general, like conservation is still a neocolonial force, like both within and outside of this country. And I'll just like add in a little science tidbit, right?
Please.
Like instead of the like social stuff, like one of the main science tidbits that is also super challenging is that the majority of wild animals, and in particular, like large carnivores, like I study, like the big ferocious, like toothy ones, live outside of protected areas, like most of them, like almost all of them.
Really?
So it's like many of them live in a protected area. Like if you go to Yellowstone, you're going to see some bears, and that is cool. But most bears live outside of Yellowstone and outside of Yosemite and outside of these places, in places that are not protected areas, that are just like regular spots. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I feel so, like you did.
Yeah. And so it's like, obviously the protected area system hasn't been a good model for many, many social reasons, but also for like actual scientific reasons, it's not like hitting it.
They're like these animals, like the
these
animals,
like they're not like that, fenced. Yeah, yeah, these animals aren't like, oh, like I just stepped outside my boundary. Right. Like, let me pull up a map and
the
make sure you
world approach to like conservation.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's like largely not working, and yet like protected areas have popped up all over the world because a few of these men, like from 120 years ago, right, thought like, you know, didn't think twice and just like went for it.
And yeah. To Miles, your point about like there was a reckoning with the, you know, white supremacist John Muir and, you know, his role in founding the Sierra Club. So I just went to Yosemite with my family, and it felt like we had traveled to like a monument to John Muir. Like parks and trails had signs quoting his wisdom, and there were, you know, stories about him coming to the land for the first time, like he had just discovered it, you know?
Yeah.
Right. He looks like a Confederate general. And it's, you know, you can't decouple like his white supremacist viewpoint from all of that. And the work that he's deified for involves ignoring or outright being hostile towards, you know, the people who were already there.
Yeah, do they have his quotes about how he spoke about black people in Georgia when he first encountered them?
They did not.
I don't think they have that.
How well-trained they were, as he put it. Yeah, like, ooh, that's the funny thing is, like, you know, we have this way of being like, but all this other good stuff, but all this other good stuff. And that's true. That's true, too. And so is this.
Yeah.
And you have to reckon with all of that. And you have to say how influential this person was and how much, like, even when they say, like, well, he never like actually supported some of these other racists that like hung on to every word he said. It's like, yeah, but he never actually denounced it either.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates the space for other people to be like, well, I don't know, maybe.
And he knew that creating protected areas was destroying communities and like, you know, whether it was like direct or indirectly killing people, like literally like ruining people's lives. It was people of color. So it was like, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, the very first like public park, it wasn't officially Yosemite yet because it was way back when, but it was where Yosemite is now. And that park was created by literally just slaughtering hundreds of indigenous people to like have that as a space of enjoyment.
And like,
hey, what could be more American?
Yeah. It's right.
Like, on this place where you ignore, like you're having a good time, willfully ignore how this space came about and go on with your day. Good day.
And let me add, because, and this is like complicated for me as someone who like holds a belief system, but still has to like work within the confines
navigate that space,
of like the system that my job is in. But like indigenous people still exist, like they existed in abundance in the past, but like they still exist in abundance, and so like it's not like they were slaughtered and died and now we have these national parks. Like folks deserve to have their land back, you know. They're asking for it, they're demanding it, like it goes without saying, it is deserved. And so, you know, someone like me, I often struggle with feeling so hypocritical because I work in protected areas, right? Like I like study large carnivores in protected areas while holding the view that like, if I had any power here, I would give the land back. Right. Like it doesn't make sense to me to like be ringing the bell of like, yay, we're doing better. We're creating conservation solutions. We have more animals, when like people and communities are still obstructed from engaging in and stewarding their land the way that they want to. I have a good feeling that like a lot of indigenous communities would choose to like do wonderful quote unquote conservation work. They probably wouldn't call it conservation, but just like conservation-ish work on these landscapes. But even if they didn't want to do that, they should be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And it's really like a tension that I have within myself where I'm like, okay, you know, sometimes I try to give myself a break and say, this is the best I can do is like do my job within the confines of the structure. But land back in America, at least, is like something that like, I think the people who believe in it don't necessarily have the power to make it come true. And that's really, really frustrating because there are people out there who have the power.
And land back is quite literally like anathema. Like it's the antithesis of manifest destiny. It's like, what? Yeah. Land back?
Right.
No, we got here being like, God told me I could have this. And now you're saying take backs? No. Like, I feel like that's.
Yeah. Like people feel like that's like unfair. You know, I have to say I do a lot of work in like parts of like rural American West, which is always an adventure.
Yes.
And it is interesting because there's like a lot of folks out there, like, you know, again, I'll use like some cattle ranchers as an example, who are really kind of grappling with the fact that like it's an uncertain future in cattle ranching, right? Like just because of the economy and society and just the market, like it's just not, it used to be super profitable and it's not, that guarantee isn't still there. And so a lot of folks are kind of like, oh, should our family continue to cattle ranch? Should we like sell our land? And I just like sit around there being like, wow. Mm. Like a lot of people still consider this to be their land because their great-great-granddaddy, you know, took it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
But like, I don't see people having conversations about like the equitable choice here.
Right.
Mm. Right.
Which I'd imagine there is a scientific argument for all of that. You know, like I can't imagine science would argue against it. Like, nah, they're good custodians of that land and we shouldn't.
There is a scientific argument. I mean, worldwide, globally, one thing that we know and that we have been able to prove as scientists is that poverty and environmental wellness are directly linked to each other. So we cannot necessarily achieve like a healthy environment without alleviating or eliminating poverty. And we can't alleviate or eliminate poverty without creating a healthy functioning environment and healthy ecosystems. And so land back is a really good argument for alleviating poverty in many places, which thus helps the environment be healthier and stronger and more resilient. And yet it's like, it's just like easy, you know, it's hard to break out of these molds at which we've been taught and to really decolonize this whole perspective and approach to conservation. But really, like, when communities of people are healthy and well, the environment is more likely to be healthy and well, and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll keep talking about this.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant... Just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you want to hear
sure about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
And we're back. And just what you were talking about right before we went to break reminded me of, have you guys watched the new Bad Bunny video that is about Puerto Rico? And it's like it has a 15-20 minute documentary attached to the end, but it's all about people, just the exact same thing. You just run into this logic over and over again of like, people live here, and then the forces of capitalism come through and just on the basis of, you know, profitability, just kick people off their land. And it's like, I feel like we must be coming to a breaking point with that logic being just the thing that everybody accepts as a reality. But it does seem to still hold sway so in so many different places, that it profitability and, you know, well, I have this right of sale from 200 years ago or whatever the people are using on their giant cattle ranches. But there has to be a way to break through that, it feels like. And it does feel like that there's energy there. I don't know what the actual means of doing it are. But Trisha, you were going to say something completely different before I started talking about Bad Bunny.
Well, it's actually kind of related though, because yes, there is this idea of, you know, how far can capitalism go in exploiting land and exploiting people, etc. And just one thing I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Ray, also pertaining to the previous conversation, was I think often this like, how to say it, I guess this exploitation of land or like taking land from the people who live there, specifically Indigenous people and local communities, can be masqueraded as like environmental conservation. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I was reading about is this movement called 30 by 30, which is essentially a movement that strives to designate 30% of the Earth's land as protected by the year 2030. And I found this really interesting because a lot of the land that people are trying to designate as protected are in the global south. And, you know, a lot of Indigenous people do live there currently. And so we talk about this problem of land being taken away from Indigenous peoples through Manifest Destiny here in the United States. And it still is very much a problem both in the U.S. and abroad. And it seems that there's kind of this dilemma where well-intentioned people want to protect nature, but by implementing these rules, they often just undermine like the cultural traditions and values and livelihoods of the people that currently live there. I remember I took a class on Indigenous people's rights in college, and one thing they talked about was that certain groups, I think like they hunt a lion once a year. Mm-hmm. And there's all these conservation groups that say lions are endangered. Yeah. You're not allowed to hunt them.
Yeah.
But this is a tradition that's very much embedded in these communities that have been going on forever. And if they had been the ones making the rules in the first place, like, we would have had a lot more lions than we do now. Similar to surveillance. It's like, you know, surveilling land with drones to make sure that people aren't breaking these environmental rules. Mm-hmm. But that can be so harmful to these communities. So I'm just wondering your take on this, like any potential solutions. How do we avoid this being another form of neocolonialism?
Yeah, Trisha, you know, easy question. But no, I appreciate you bringing
this up. She's like, can I answer the one about Jurassic Park?
I know. I'm like, can we talk about Twitter again? Bad Bunny. No, I appreciate it. Like, a lot of people do not necessarily think about the role of incarceration and law enforcement when it comes to conservation, right? And so, like, I will not derail us to talk about poaching or illegal hunting is another way to call it. But like the incarceration rates of like men of color for killing wild animals for like is very, very high. And it is a huge, huge problem. And it is not keeping wild animals from going extinct, right? Like locking up more, you know, let's say like Black African men is not like keeping the elephants around, right? And yet like every day, we are incarcerating more and more people for using natural resources, you know, that used to be available. So that is actually a whole like project that I am beginning in my scholarship and bringing students into to kind of use like environmental science and data science to construct like a, you know, liberation argument. So anyway, like, wow. Can't tell. I have like some super radical views here. but for 30 by 30, I do want to like, you know, like, suggest a positive spin on it. And so you articulated it really well. The 30 by 30 is this little tagline, but essentially the goal is to preserve 30% of nature or the wilderness or the landscapes by 2030. And it largely has to do with climate change mitigation. It's like, if we are going to have a planet in 100 right. years, like we actually need to like stop development on like a large part of the land. And 30 by 30 is also supposed to be replicated in the ocean, right? Like at least 30% of the ocean needs to be protected, right? From like any kind of development or human influence by 2030. Otherwise, we're going to have a rough future ahead of us. And when you ask for solutions, I think a really good one, and I've like contributed some of my knowledge to America's 30 by 30 initiative, is to have like what we call like mixed use landscapes, right? Like landscapes where like people live, there is like economic prosperity, but we are not being destructive on that land. And we are not like doing harm to the land by using it. And if we can make sure that especially communities like have economic mobility on those landscapes in an environmentally friendly way, then I think we will hit some win-win solutions there. So we can't make 30 by 30 just like, you know, more protected areas,
right,
like in the same model, you know, but if we can consider like urban green spaces a part of that 30%, if we can consider, you know, like little stretches on the side of the highway, you know, a part of that 30%, if we can consider, you know, area, you know, even farmland can be part of that 30%, as long as you're not like spraying pesticides and, you know, like planting like non-native, you know, plants or grasses, like why not, you know, as long as you would allow some birds, you know, to land, right. Like that could be it. So there are some creative ways. And I think in particular, like some community led ways, like allowing communities to decide like what is a healthy way to use this land, could be a really great way that we can meet those goals. You know, with that said, it's almost 2023. So we definitely need to empower like thought leaders who lead with equity and justice, right. Like to be the decision makers here. But, you know, I do know some people, some awesome, dope, open-minded, like radical people of color who are part of these initiatives. And I have a lot of hope that we can make it work.
Right. And it seems like so much of it too is like when just thinking of John Muir, like just his initial idea of like, save all this, cordon it off. There's people there, get them the fuck out because we have to keep this pristine. Like that flawed, just overly simplified way of thinking, it just echoes constantly, right? In so many ways of basically not necessarily like that specific way, but to say we can't consider the people that live on the land, for like as like that's just not even a thought that enters. Mm-hmm. It's just that you're actually in the way. And like this sort of idea of not considering like the totality of like what the human experience is as it relates to things, I think has existed. Like I was reading about how that the people who wrote that like population bomb book had to come around and be like, we were so fucking wrong.
It was racist. Yeah.
Like this was nonsense. Like we just came up with fucking very Murian thinking or whatever.
Right. They were basically like, it's overpopulation in the global south. That's the problem with this planet, not all the overconsumption and
by the elites. Right.
Like irresponsible resource use from like Western countries. Like we're good because we only have one or two kids, even though we destroy the entire earth. But like these people with large families that like use
they
minimal
want
resources.
Them. They would say like they want these families. And then they came around. They're like, yeah, so we were all wrong about that. Yeah. The way towards that is about like having access to like abortion, like racial equity, gender equality. Those are actually the things that we need to have to like to survive. And it's funny how the like ignoring those things, like it's always happening at our own peril just for people to come back. Like, you know, good for them that they were like, okay, that was totally fucked up. We left so much shit out. Ignore that fucking take. But so many conservationists still kind of have this idea of like, the populace, it's too much. We got to do something about this while completely ignoring the equality dimension of it and understanding like the aspects of hegemony, global oppression, things like that.
And without acknowledging like how we got to this place of having so many environmental needs, like that was driven entirely by like white male dominance, white supremacist patriarchy got us to this place of trouble. Yeah. Like you cannot create any other argument. And yet these people are like, put the blame everywhere else because we can't accept that. Like
those people that were here
really
before.
Messed up.
Yeah.
The hunting that they've been doing for centuries is the problem, not when we caught wind of some other resources.
Yeah,
the killing
of one lion a year, man, we can't do that anymore because we won't have any lions left. It's like all the lions y'all killed during colonialism, hundreds of thousands of them. That was different somehow.
Yeah, like that their one lion a year argument is like when they're like, you guys got to use these different light bulbs. You're burning down the fucking earth. It's like, well, that's not really the case here. You're trying to put it on me about all this other fuckery that's going on. But
yeah, the
nice
onus
try.
On the individual, which kind of brings me back to what I was saying about recycling, y'all. Like, it's like there is a system out there that needs to be changed. And like, please recycle, like keep it up. But like, whether or not you are an active in recycling is not as important about as whether or not like these corporate machines can be redirected to stop harming the environment like in full force.
Yeah, I really liked what you said, Dr. A, about like, you know, green spaces outside of just a national park or a completely protected place. Like just thinking about all the community gardens in New York, like the little gardens on the block or the little parks. And I was just thinking that, you know, if we designate that as nature too, it's an opportunity for people of color, communities of color, to feel connected to nature without going on some big trip to Yosemite or Acadia,
which
a lot of people can't afford.
I feel like the John Muir quotes, just going back to him, treat nature like he's describing it like a pharmaceutical ad for some psych med. Like it's all about like how it makes you feel. And it's almost still in that
consumption.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You consume this landscape, but that also puts it back to him to be in a position of power to design the landscape in a way that is, you know, subjectively beautiful and creating this effect.
And it kind of like makes a business case for conservation. Like we should have like healthy, thriving nature so that like it can help our bodies, minds, and spirits instead of like we're a part of nature. Like we should offer respect to this planet that like was here before humans were, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I read that there's still so many things in national parks that make them unfriendly and unwelcoming to visitors of color. First of all, 95% of the visitors to national parks are white. which is like totally disproportionate to the actual demographics of the country. But then there's also just smaller things like the uniforms of park rangers can be changed because now they look like police uniforms in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And that's not very welcoming to people.
And there is also a lot of policing that happens in national parks. Like they have like warden, like game wardens and stuff. Like they are law enforcement.
Right.
And there are, you know, there's been some cover ups in the last few years, but there have been like, you know, shootings of unarmed, like, men of color in national parks and protected areas, just like the, some of the issues we have in, with the police. Yeah.
And it makes me think too of Christian Cooper, who is the bird watcher in Central Park, who was kind of like attacked by this white lady for no reason. I mean, he was just watching birds. And so there's actually studies as well or surveys that show that white people are uncomfortable with people of color sharing natural space with them, which is like, how racist do you have to be to admit that to a survey even, you know?
Right.
Well, and it kind of goes back to like Miles was saying, you know, about like camping, like growing up, it was like, oh, like I can't go camping with my like.
I didn't even do Boy Scouts because I honestly, in my mind, like, I was like, that's not a thing. I've never seen somebody who looks like me do that.
Not a thing, but also like you could imagine that like maybe we don't vocalize it, but it can feel very unsafe. Like black, like I'm black, so I will speak from the black experience. Like black folks are unsafe, like at the grocery store. Like we are not safe, like in regular places, in the urban, suburban, you know, like don't let it be rural, you know, environment. So let alone like under the cover of darkness in like a remote place, like our physical safety, like it's not worth it to go camping if you don't come back, you know, like it's just not. And so considering we're still working to like remain safe, just living our regular lives, like it can feel like a huge risk. You'd be like, I'll go ahead and have like a lot of stress and high blood pressure and not get that benefit from nature because, like, it's better than being dead. Not to say that, like, the outdoors is dangerous, but America hasn't proven to us that it's not.
Or that we're welcome, right?
Or that we're welcome. I mean, like, Ahmaud Arbery, right, was shot and killed 2 years ago while, like, going for a jog, like, adjacent to a park. You know what I mean? Like just for existing as a black person, racist people shot him to death. Like, you know, we get feedback, we get examples of how we are unwelcome or it is not safe for us to be in these places. You know, in order to disrupt that, I try to use myself and the people I know, and there are like some really great groups out there that create like safe experiences for people of color in the outdoors that break down those stereotypes, that, you know, really try to prove that we belong, you know, like it can be a wonderful experience. You know, I camp for a living, you know, like to find the animals that I'm looking for and that I'm studying. Like I pitch a tent and I camp often by myself. I am happy to say that there have been places that I thought I was going to be in danger or have a horrible experience. And I literally never have. Like the horrible racist experiences that I have are like in towns, you know, not
in academia,
not in the outdoors, in academia, in my institutions. Like, you know, in the cattle ranching towns too, though, but, you know, like not when I am pitching my tent. And so like, I am here to say, I understand the perceptions because they're rooted in reality. And also I hope to serve as one of many examples that like the outdoors can be a wonderful, beautiful place, you know, to find joy and to find inspiration and passion. And, you know, there are so many awesome groups out there, like really trying to, you know, reimagine what equitable, inclusive outdoors looks like.
Well, I think that's a great place to close. We're so grateful that you came and guested on our show, Dr. Ray.
Where
can people find you and follow you and learn more about what you're doing?
Oh, so I, you know, I'm a millennial, so, you know, we invented social media. I try to have a little presence there. You can find me on, you know, all the social media channels at Raywin Grant. And in particular, my really amazing, I'm not just tooting my own horn, it's an amazing podcast that I have with so PBS Nature. It is so good. Season 2 drops September 27th. It is phenomenal. It features a lot of my own stories from my crazy life in the wilderness, but also stories from some of my colleagues that I hand-selected, some of the best wildlife ecologists from around the world. They may or may not all happen to be people of color. Get to know them. They are going to share some of their wildest experiences. So Going Wild on PBS Nature, wherever you get your podcasts, all the platforms has it. September 27th. Join us.
Amazing. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Oh, yeah. No, I did think of a good tweet. And I don't know what the rules are about promoting brands. But if you take to Twitter, you might see that the company Patagonia has been trending. Mm-hmm. And that's because that brand that makes, you know, outdoor gear and clothes and stuff has recently done something pretty radical by essentially no longer being a for-profit company where profits go to people. But now the for-profit, the profits from the company go directly to the planet, in particular to communities and groups that are fighting for indigenous rights to the environment and some climate change solutions. It is dope.
Very cool. Trisha, thank
Amazon
you.
Amazon will do that next, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're on track.
Trisha, where can people find you, follow you, and is there a work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, I'm not sure if I'm Gen Z or millennial. I think I'm technically
Gen Z. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't have social media.
So yeah.
I was going to say, if you have to ask, that means you're Gen Z.
Okay. So I don't have social media. You can listen to more stories similar to the topics you've heard me talk about on TDC on my podcast, People Place Power. It's about activism around the world. And yeah, so I don't use Twitter much, but I just opened it.
That's why you're so happy, Trisha. That's why you're so happy, is because you don't use Twitter.
I found a video that contributes to happiness as well. And it's a video of a dog holding a bunch of carrots, like, and they're hanging. Yes, and then there's all these rabbits and like a little pig eating the carrots from the dog. So it's a happy, natural video of communal love.
Oh my god, obsessed.
I love how calm the dog is too. Like the dog knows it's feeding the rabbits. Like, right. And some rabbits are eating the greens of the carrots, some are eating the carrots.
Yeah.
I saw that too. It warmed my heart.
And the little pig that's in there too. It's like he doesn't even know he's different from the bunnies. But yeah, go check it out.
He doesn't even know he's different from the bunnies. I love that.
Identity doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know that take. That's like they don't even care.
The sunny, unruined disposition of someone who doesn't have Twitter.
Yeah, I love
he doesn't know he's different.
Long may it last.
Miles, where can people find you? What's the tweet you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. If you want to hear Jack and I talk basketball, check out our basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. And then also, if you want to hear me talk about my favorite reality show, 90 Day Fiance, check out my other podcast, 420 Day Fiance. Yeah, read between the lines. let's see, some tweets that I like. The first one is from at Perfect Sweeties, and it says, I've been taking some notes, and there's a Venn diagram that's British people and ants. On the left side of the Venn diagram that doesn't overlap, for British people, it says beans on toast. On the right side where it says ants that doesn't overlap, it says can lift up to 5,000 times their own weight. Then in the middle of their overlap, the Venn diagram reads, weird loyalty to their queen, innate instinct to line up single file and travel in a queue, takes things that aren't theirs back to their colony, love for crumbly pastries.
Damn. That is...
Got him! Love that one. And then the last one is from at Telmudic, M-U-D-I-C, tweeted, the first time I heard of the GOMAD, gallon of milk a day, diet, I laughed my ass off. There's no way I'm halving my milk intake for a diet.
I had that one too.
So absurd.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien and at Miles and Jack. I'm at Boosties.
Yeah.
Tweet I enjoyed. No, we saw. Now he sings. Actually, is how you're going to pronounce that.
No
wee sobs. tweeted unemployed guy at 2 p.m. Man, the group chat's been silent. And then Rose at Sleepless in Kentucky tweeted, this man poured me three shots thinking I was going to get horny. Sir, I'm about to start freestyling.
That's so real.
The real response. Yeah. Do not put the shook ones, instrumental ones.
You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Hey, Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
There's a new Tame Impala and Gorillaz song out that I was like, what? I haven't heard Kevin Parker's voice in a little bit. It's called New Gold. I think it's technically a Gorillaz song featuring Tame Impala, but look, whatever band you like, pretend it's their track, but they're all both on it. So here's New Gold, Gorillaz, Tame Impala. Check it out.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.